Welcome to the Ortho Joe Podcast, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. Join hosts Mohit Bhandari and Mark Swankowski as they discuss current topics and publications in the world of orthopedics and beyond.
Good morning, Mark. I've got something different this morning. I'm trying a cold version of coffee, yeah. A little bit of ice in it. And I didn't know that was an option. You could just walk into our local Tim Hortons and say, can I have a cold coffee? And they do it. And I just put some of that into my mug this morning. So trying something a bit different. Yeah, I'm not sure I love it. But anyways, it's interesting.
I'm with you.
Oh, my gotcha. Hot.
French vanilla this morning. Not Tim Hortons.
It's very nice.
Javalia something. But anyway.
Very nice. Listen.
First one of the day, I'm all set.
So
what's on your mind?
So with all of this, you know, rapid pace change on artificial intelligence and the world's changing so quickly, we're seeing tons of submissions at JVGS. I was particularly interested in an orthopedic forum piece. Under the what's important this past month on non-neural networks. Now, what is a non-neural network, you might ask? Well, colleagues who have been building a network, a personal professional network, talk about, well, this idea of, well, let's get away from the instantaneous answers that we're getting used to, the millisecond answers we're used to. And actually, what does it take to actually, at a human level, build a network? And this is a piece that I'll show you, that as you've always done, is you just kind of give the idea. It's in the orthopedic forum, and the authors are Richardson, Obana, Bernstein, and Bai. And both of all of them have talked a little bit about what it takes to build networks, right from the point of, you know, undergraduate through medical school, through residency, and as important for the big part of your career in surgery, which would be post-residency network development. And they go on a host of, you know, of different opportunities, anywhere from attending meetings to how do you identify a mentor and what's the value, what's the magic number in a network, all these things. I don't think there are any absolutes here, but I know you have some thoughts on this particular topic. And I might just kind of start off with a very broad question to you, Mark, which is, when we talk about the value of networks, to you on a personal note, and wherever you want to take this, what's the value to you of having a diverse and large network? And is that, you know, in any way shaped by, you know, the things you want to do? Or is there a, you know, in building a network, is small versus large important? Or what are the things that you would think about? And how early did you start thinking about your own personal network development? Lots in there, but you can take it.
Yeah. You know, I would say that large versus small isn't really the question. It's the quality. It's the commitment to the relationship and the candid nature of the communication, be it positive or negative, is where the value lies. And, you know, I wouldn't say that I've never had planned this sort of thing, but have been attracted to people that I sensed would give honest and candid feedback, not only on performance issues, but life issues. And as far as how it expands, I don't know that it's continuous expansion. It's more like there are phases, and the piece you refer to talks about beginning networks in medical school and then into residency and then into professional life, which I think is kind of the way it works. But in medical school, you kind of are attracted to faculty who seem to be open to having a brief discussion with you and offering you advice and input, as well as fellow students who have, you know, shared values. And then residency, of course, is the most intense time in our evolution as professionals, where because you're in the fire together and you're on the front lines, et cetera, you really find out who's got the stuff that you're attracted to as far as character and principles and ethics. And then that kind of moves on. But there are rare instances where the same group of mentors go from pre-medical school to medical school to residency to, it kind of evolves in phases of life.
It's very different. Yeah, it's very different too. Like, I wonder, you know, I think for myself, and I'm pretty sure it's for you in the same way, which is, you know, we placed a lot of importance and value on the face-to-face interactions, like getting to know somebody. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, in the current, I'd say just the way, you know, our generation works, it's far easier to send a short email, a short text, a WhatsApp, whatever it may be. And you start getting these communications and you can so get this idea of having a massive network of individuals that you kind of know versus mm-hmm. the much more intense relationships of the 1 to 2, 1 to 3 or 4 or 5 people that you know. And, you know, it's much, much easier. I see it with our early career faculty when I say, you know what, you should think about interacting and contacting some people. They say, yeah, no problem. And I see, no joking, like 15 to 20 emails go out that evening. And then I go and I call them. I call back the faculty member and I'll say, hey, you know, what about actually trying to, I mean, if you get a response, which is great, but what about even a phone call? He goes, oh, you want to organize a Zoom? I said, well, like maybe just a phone call, chat with them. He goes, and once you chat with them, take time out of your practice or whatever it is you're doing and go visit them. Like really spend time, you know, that's how you're going to have to do this. If you want to develop this global network, or if you just, even if you want to go to a neighboring institution, that comes with a lot of pause when I say that to some of our faculty members, like, oh, okay, well, that's a little more time investment. I have to think about this. And I guess my question to you was this, should we have to think about it? Like, if you're going to build a network, should it be top of mind to just get out there and interact on a different level? And I'm not saying you can't do it with a cell phone call or a Zoom or whatever else, but my hunch is it's going to be less meaningful.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And you've written a lot and posted a lot on LinkedIn and et cetera on your philosophy of meeting with people away from work and spending time on a mountain bike or chopping through ice and jumping in for your
whatever
brain therapy. and there's a bit of a, you know, I spoke earlier about the fire of residency. When you're out doing something physical with somebody or trying to see if they can hit a golf ball straight, and when it goes crooked, how do they react? There's an element there of helping you to understand, is this a beneficial relationship for the both of us? Is it going to be worth more investment of time? And can I really get true accountability from this individual? So, yeah, I think it has to be purposeful in trying to block out these experiences and encounter individuals. And I do not believe that texting is a way to go about it. I think you have to have, in my view, face-to-face is better. Phone call is next. And once you have a relationship, these other tools are useful. But to establish it, to find out if there's a give and take in a true mentoring way, I think you've got to invest the time and be purposeful about it. We all need people that are going to tell us the truth about our behavior and our performance. And it's an invaluable asset, and you need to work to get it.
And can I ask you this? What's the last time, and maybe it's happened, so if it happened, that this is great, but I very rarely right now get emails, or I'll say initial communication from somebody I don't know, in which it isn't just about one thing, which I know the ulterior motive. I'm trying to get into a competitive residency. I'm trying to get into med school. And I just come and work in your quote lab research, whatever it may be. And that's the opening feeling. But the occasional time, Mark, I'll get an email from some student saying, I'm looking for a chance to spend 15 minutes chatting with someone about my career, my future. And when I've gotten that rare call or rare interaction, and it's not always a medical student, it's not always an undergrad, I've seen it happen rarely with some faculty members, and I immediately make that a face-to-face. I don't want to do that over a call or a Zoom, and usually we can work it out. And I can tell you, those have been for me some of the most memorable interactions, because for me, when I've sat with yourself, I've sat with Gordon, I've sat with Paul Trinetta, Emil Shemich, I have all these people that I've sat with. You may not remember some of the things that you may have said to me, but I sure do. And I remember it because I was really genuinely at that moment trying to think and struggle. And it wasn't always about writing the next paper or the next grant, right? It's trying to figure out life. And I wonder from your perspective, how you handle that, or are you getting that? And maybe we should put a call out to people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this what's important, I think, is a really, really important issue, which is, you know, a call to anyone who's looking for support to reach out and check in, not just for academic purposes, but for life purposes.
Yeah, I think it would be an important message. And it's funny you bring this up. It just happened 4 minutes before we started this recording. A graduate medical student who's spending a year in research and sports.
Yes.
Just stopped and knocked on the door and asked, can we spend some time? So, I mean, yes, it happens. And it's a small thing to offer somebody some advice and some counsel, but it's a big deal for them. And, you know, the experience you have, whether it be research or work-life balance or mastering the game of golf, which you have done nicely.
I got to tell something about that. I'll tell you something about that separately, but anyways.
It's very valuable to the individual, and all of us had people do that for us earlier on. And it's as this article ends, you know, it's giving it back. That's what we owe it to the people that come after us.
So on a recent flight, I had some, you know, 3 or 4 hours. I thought, okay, well, I'm going to read and try to take advantage of this, you know, of this time. And I read a book that, and I'm not here to promote books, but I'm just telling you, it had an impact in the context of, you know, if you read a book, it sometimes hits you at the right time. So it's called Slow Productivity by Cal Newport. Again, those who are interested in that will read it. But yeah, the fundamental message of that is something that we had done some years ago too. I just want to put another point to, we talked about in OrthoEvidence, every year in 2023 year, we started with Towards Excellence 12 Habits. And I'll tell you, it was amazing to see that resonating and reminding. The first thing of this message of being productive is, well, maybe to be productive, you got to really slow down, right? Like, you know, the idea of 20 to 100 things at once, and especially when you're a medical student in residency in your early career, you just think you have to do it all. And the storyline is, you never ask someone doing nothing to do something. You ask the person doing 100 things because they're more likely to get it done. Maybe that's not the right way to move in life. You know, I tried it, and I'm not sure at the time I knew what I was in. You just kind of, you're in it, but it says slow down, you know, do fewer things, do more at a natural pace rather than feeling hurried. And you said it to start off with, you know, it's not the quantity of your network, it's the quality of your network. And I go back to this 12 habits, and, you know, one of our early habits in it was focus on quality connections. That was one of the things that was one of the fundamentals. Limit your obligations, you know, take more initiative. There's a whole bunch of things that I went back and read this again, having done that, you know, we were on the right track. And there's a lot of, I'll use the word evidence, you know, in the context of that when you do some of these things, you do feel that there's a dramatic change in the way you function and the way you behave. I wonder, you know, in some ways, as you're looking to build networks and you're looking to surround yourself with the right people, and you had said the people that are with you in medical school may not be the ones who are with you in residency, may not be the ones who are with you post. How do you decide when it's time to change your network, Mark? Like, was that just organic for you? Did that go to where you were feeling at the time? Did you feel you had to expand it and you just sort of let things, you know, things change organically, or was it more deliberate for you?
I think it just comes with the various stages in life and career. You know, an individual who is with you in medical school when you were all trying to do the best you can and identify the right specialty, et cetera. Although I am in contact with several of those individuals on a fairly regular basis, they wouldn't be as helpful as when I was in the chair position and seeking to get some mentoring from somebody who'd done that. As you all know, there's a lot of value in a mentor who can tell you how to deal with difficult faculty issues and how to counsel faculty who are having issues and help them. So it just happens organically. The same thing with your personal and family life. You know, when you have grandchildren, your needs and talking to other individuals are different than when your kids are in high school and you're really worried they're going to spin out of control kind of thing. So, I think it just happens organically as your responsibilities and your personal life evolves.
And having been involved in many levels of leadership, Mark, do you feel most of us need to have this happen? I always have this impression that many of us go through our careers, our lives, just keep everything bottled in, thinking we can manage everything, thinking we can manage all the different things. And you kind of get moments where you'll maybe reach out, but you really won't. I have a feeling that very few across all levels of their journey through orthopedics make it a priority to try to build a network that's meaningful to them. And if you had a call to action, that you're speaking to someone right now who may be listening or who may hear about it from someone else, what's your message to that individual who's on the fence? I should take some time. I should, I've always wanted to go and interact with so-and-so, or I wanted to get in this area. I need some advice. What's your message to that individual who's on the fence right now about reaching out to somebody?
Well, it would be the same message I would give anybody who's not physically active. And that is, once you can, in your the article you referred to in OE does talk about habit tracking, and et cetera, et cetera. Once you begin to develop the habit of being physically active, you will never regret it because you're better off for it. And that's 100% true. The same thing with relationship and mentoring, network building. Once you do the work to establish it, you will understand the value and you will always value it. When we all have people that we're in our professional sphere who have spun out of control mid or late career, and you can't believe this has happened to them or they did that. Almost to the individual, if you look at it, they do not have this network of people who are all along giving them feedback and making them accountable for their decisions and their actions. And they're kind of an island. And because of that, with the lack of feedback, they're unaware of how these issues are developing. And next thing you know, there's some disaster. So anyway, once you establish it, you'll be grateful forever.
And, I'll end on this, which is, you say, as you said, if you just start, you got to start doing something to build the habit. And, James Clear, in one of the quotes in that we put in that one particular paper, said at the end, said, small habits don't add up, they compound. Mm-hmm. So, if you can get started, contact that person, interact with that person. Don't wait till tomorrow. Don't wait till tomorrow. Get started. Start today. Send the email and then work deliberately at, building that meaningful network. The next meeting you're at, for example, just go out and identify yourself, interact with someone you don't know. We call a breakfast breakthrough almost, where you just invite someone you don't know to breakfast. Have a chat with them, and who knows what may come of that, right? You and I have had lots and lots of amazing, almost you would say unplanned moments where things come out of just by putting ourselves in a position where good things can happen. So I'm definitely grateful to all the interactions we have, and I really hope those listening in might start building some interesting interactions of their own. So on that, I wish you a lovely rest of your day, Mark, and we'll be seeing you soon at the editors' meeting in Minneapolis. Can't wait.
That'll be great. Hopefully we won't have any storms that knock trees down.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I hope not.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.